Hello and welcome to another episode of CISO Tradecraft, the podcast that provides you with the information, knowledge, and wisdom to be a more effective cybersecurity leader. I'm your host, G. Mark Hardy, and today we are going to be talking about vulnerabilities and more precisely how to manage them so they don't manage you. Now, if you're following us on LinkedIn, great. If not, you're missing out on more than just the podcast, and please consider subscribing to our channel on YouTube. Now, let me ask you a question as we get started. Do you hate the number of vulnerabilities that you see from various tools in your organization? I mean, if you do, I mean, don't worry. Most CISOs do have that issue, and that's why in today's show, we're going to walk you through building a comprehensive vulnerability management program that takes care of that issue for you. Now, let's start with some basics. How about the term vulnerability management? So we're all speaking the same language. According to Park Forman, who is a security compliance architect at IBM's cloud brokerage services, he wrote a book called Vulnerability Management, and it's defined the term is vulnerability management is a cyclical practice of identifying, classifying, prioritizing, remediating, and mitigating software vulnerabilities. Catch that? It's a lot more than just patching. You need to identify what must be patched first. You need to classify it into critical, high, medium, low, or noteworthy, and then you should prioritize it. Your organization may choose to patch only the highs and the criticals. Then you get to remediate the vulnerabilities. And finally, if you can't patch everything, then you need to consider whether these vulnerabilities should be mitigated another way, by perhaps segregating them into an isolated network, placing a firewall or some other type of tool in front that'll block the attacks from occurring, or you could just willing to sign off and accept the risk. You see, vulnerability management is a critical aspect of any cybersecurity program. It enables organizations to identify, prioritize, and remediate the vulnerabilities in their systems and networks before they can be exploited by attackers. Now let's look at how bad actors take advantage of vulnerabilities. It usually goes something like this. A bad actor will watch ExploitDB or go ahead and download Metasploit or look at their chats and see when a brand new remote code exploit is created that bypasses authentication. Woohoo! Now once they pick an attack vector, they just need to find a victim. Bad actor can then go to Shodan search engine at shodan.io. Don't do that. Go get an account. And if you're really, really strapped for cash, wait till Black Friday because they have a pretty good deal. Anyway, that website allows you to search potentially every device that's connected on the internet. Now, it's not the pen tester per se, but rather that it's looking at is the banners that are advertised for something that connects to the systems. And from there, you might be able to say, hey, I'm looking for this version of this particular product or this tool. And if I have a banner that matches it, boom, we go. And if I've got a remote code exploit that works on it, I've got a list of candidate victims. Now, with this list of vulnerable targets, you can do DNS lookups for each IP address, validate which targets might be the most profitable to break into. And once the attacker prioritizes the landscape of potential victims, they're off to the races and breaking into the systems. Now, KiwiCon 3 had a great poster that shows that bad actors don't care if your system is a legacy system that's too hard to patch. Bad actors don't care if your system is on the risk register. Bad actors don't care if there isn't a good ROI to replace the system. And the bad actors don't care if it's an interim solution that you're going to replace in 6 months, or if your priorities are directed to some other key project for the business, or you're scheduled to go on vacation this week, or the system is waiting for patches to the vendors. I'm pretty sure ransomware groups don't look up your company to see if they've had a SOC 2 or an ISO 27001 and said, oh, wow, this company is compliant. Guess they're too hard to reach. Yeah, right. Bad actors just care about if your systems are vulnerable and if they have a way to exploit that vulnerability and if they think that harming your system is going to be profitable or entertaining in some way. So it's up to you to establish a vulnerability management program that can overcome the bad actor's capabilities. Now to start, we need to understand that there's no magic bullet that does everything. You're going to need multiple solutions to protect your organization. First, you need to understand that different tools will detect different types of vulnerabilities. For example, if you have an operating system like Windows Server or Linux, then those things will need to be scanned by a vulnerability management tool like a Qualys or Nessus or Rapid7. Now we're not endorsing any of these tools in particular, but what we want you to do is understand how these tools work from a technical level, from what they'll look at. For example, a few years ago, one of my colleagues was looking into how Qualys identified vulnerabilities on Red Hat systems and found something quite interesting and maybe alarming. Hollis looked for packages that had been installed on Red Hat through the package manager, Yum. Now, that's the most common way developers install packages at Red Hat, right? You run a command like yum install package name. And if you'd installed an old package with a vulnerability, hey, the scan would tell you. That's great. However, if you installed a package by downloading it with a command like wget, then move the file to the directory made it executable, didn't use the Red Hat package manager to install the package at all, did you? End result was, Qualys didn't see those types of vulnerabilities at all, and they left your company completely blind that you're running bad versions of software. Now, I have not taken a close look at the tool set today, so I can't be certain that that's the case, but if it is or isn't, message me back at CISO Tradecraft on LinkedIn, and I can update my data. But be sure you want to understand how the vulnerability scanners work for the tools that you own. And that way, you know, you can look for ways that it might not be telling you the things that you might need to know are really there. Now, once you get vulnerability tools scanning operating systems and middleware applications, you might notice there's whole classes of software that they don't scan. Most vulnerability management systems don't scan the application libraries. If you run things like Log4j or Apache Struts, then you're going to need another vulnerability tool for scanning. Now, some organizations scan application libraries with software composition analysis or SCA tools like Dependabot, Black Duck, or Snyk. However, we also encourage you to look at another category of tools called Runtime Application Self-Protection, or RASP. RASP will tell you two things that you don't get with the software composition analysis tools. First, it tells you what's running in production, which is way more important to know than what's in a GitHub repository. Secondly, RASP could actually look into commercials off-the-shelf or COTS applications to tell you what they run and if it's vulnerable. See, remember, bad actors don't care if your organization wrote the code or if it was built by a third party. They care is it vulnerable? That's what you need to identify. So long story short, you need to run a variety of tools that will find your vulnerabilities because each category of tool generally finds something that other categories can't. Now, here's what we tend to recommend. You need a static application security testing, or SAST, to find custom vulnerabilities in your code. You need a runtime application self-protection tool, RASP, and a software composition analysis tool, SCA, to identify vulnerable application libraries. You need a vulnerability management tool to find operating system, package, and middleware vulnerabilities. And you should also run a dynamic application security testing or DAST tool or an interactive application security testing, IAST tool, not sure how to pronounce that one, to find if you have common web application vulnerabilities. You're also going to need container security scanning, cloud security posture management, API security, mobile application security software, if you're running any of those additional services. Now, let's see to the hard part. You got all of those application and product security tools up and running, and you can successfully identify vulnerabilities across your entire organization. What's next? Well, put yourself in the shoes of the developer. Imagine them coming to you to say, hey, CISO, they just got to assign 100 vulnerabilities to patch from 5 different security tools. Now, right now, I've only got 20 hours of time to address vulnerability remediation. I can't get to all of them. What should I fix first? Now, if you get that question, you need to prioritize the work for the developer, or somebody does, but here's what you might say. Say the first thing I need to do is fix the vulnerabilities that are internet-facing, since they are the most likely to cause our organization harm. Let's face it. Outside world, 7 or 8 billion potential attackers. Inside world, a whole lot less. In addition, I want you to fix the critical and high vulnerabilities first of those. You might even create a service-level agreement and an information security standard that says, you shall patch internet-facing systems within 15 days of when a patch is developed and announced, and you shall patch internal systems within 30 days of any high or critical vulnerability that is found. Okay, that's understandable. Now, some organizations are also putting different additional filters on this, like only vulnerabilities where a patch is currently available, which makes sense. It's hard for developers to patch when there isn't a patch available. Now, additionally, some organizations have also put a filter that says critical and high vulns must have a known exploit. Now, I'm not sure that's the best one to put out there, but it does help you prioritize. For example, let's say your organization takes 3 days to patch any vulnerability identified. Now, that would make them world class. Now, if your organization didn't patch critical vulnerabilities because there just wasn't an exploit on ExploitDB today, that means when the exploit gets published, got a 3-day exposure window instead of having already been patched for the time the vulnerability was published. It's a lot of risk to accept that most regulators might push back on. So think about prioritizing them, saying if there is a public exploit out there, do that first. But if something is a critical or high CBSS score, 8, 9, heaven forbid a 10, even if there's no vuln exploit out there, patch it anyway, because it might come along. Now, something that's down there at the 3 or 4 level on CBSS, those can dwell for a long time. And one of the things that I try to help people understand, we were looking at vulnerabilities and management and how bad is bad. And the example, I might have used it before, and if you've heard it, you can skip ahead 60 seconds, is imagine you have a hole in your pocket, and it's big enough for a penny to fall out. And it costs $10 to get that hole fixed. Would you go ahead and fix it if the only thing that could ever fall out of your pocket are pennies? Well, unless you carry around tons and tons and tons of pennies, you're probably going to go, nah, so I can just live with it. But if it's big enough for your wallet to fall out, you're going to pay the 10 bucks to patch it because you could lose a lot more. Same thing with the prioritization. You want to identify where's that cut line above which I cannot accept this risk. This is going to be too much for the organization to handle when there is a patch available. But even if there's a $10 patch available to fix a hole in your pocket, you might say, we'll never incur $10 worth of loss. Think about how retailers deal with loss prevention. Walmart store is never going to go broke if kids steal a candy bar. It can go broke if someone steals all the electronics. So as a result, think about what risk you want to accept. Spend the time. Create a prioritization plan that works well for your organization that meets your risk profile. And make sure to have it reviewed by your legal team to ensure that you minimize your liability to an acceptable level. Now, one more pro tip. Remember that certain tools are known to have more false positive than others. For example, a SAST tool, which looks for code in custom Java, more likely to be wrong than a vulnerability management tool that looks for bad versions of Java installed by a package manager. So if you have two findings that are equal in severity, it's probably better to fix the one that is more likely to not be a false positive. So prioritize findings that have been confirmed by humans first. For example, pen tests and red team findings. And then those that are most accurate patch second. Versions of software from container scanning and vulnerability management tools before you go to the least accurate tools like a SAST. This allows you to fix real findings versus going down Scooby-Doo chases on false positives findings from your tools. Also, build in a process where developers can report a false positive and have the finding removed from their metrics so they don't get dinged for something that they didn't have to fix in the first place. Now, remember, when you look at remediating vulnerabilities, don't get lost in the weeds. For example, there's always going to be another patch Tuesday with numerous vulnerabilities to fix. Don't let this week's vulnerability distract you from the overall picture of how an organization could patch faster across all of its systems. So here's what I want you to do. Build a list of all the steps it takes for your team to fully patch a vulnerability and record how long each step takes. For example, it might take 2 days for your dynamic application security testing scanners to scan your entire organization. Then it might take an hour to assign that vulnerability to the correct team for fixing, and it takes time to validate that the vulnerability isn't a false positive. Now, don't forget, it has to be prioritized based on what we mentioned a moment ago, and then determine if the patch exists. Build a proof of concept fix, test the fix, and so on until the fix gets deployed and validated for success. Now, once you have the average time that each step currently takes, get a tiger team of your smartest folks from databases, endpoints, networks, applications, servers, and say, hey, I want you to imagine a future where we could do each of these steps faster. What is the optimal time each step could take? How can we do this better? For example, you might see that instead of 2 days to run a scan, you might be able to get it down to 2 hours. Now, there's an opportunity to improve right there. Do this for all of your various steps and determine which are the least efficient. And you might come up with something like the following. Every change still needs to wait for approval for the change approval board. And since it only meets weekly, it's a maximum 7-day delay, maybe less, maybe more, but on average, maybe 3.5 days for most teams. Now, if we could automate approval, if it passed various checks in a DevSecOps pipeline, the end result is organization could use this automated approval pipeline instead of waiting up to 7 days. Now it could be only 1 hour to deploy the fix. It's a lot of time saved for all the vulnerability patching. Another example might be regression testing. Today, if we push a new patch, we need a business analyst to log into the system, test everything, see if it still works as desired, and that usually takes a few days. However, and automate that test in tools like Selenium, then we could perform this test in maybe 10 minutes. And this means we could also save some time here. So one by one, you go through where you could optimize the patching process, look for ways that your vulnerability management program can maximize your throughput, get permissions, test them and validate it, and put those improvements out there. See, now that you're improving your vulnerability management program, don't forget to measure the effectiveness of this. You need something that says how many days old the vulnerabilities are and how many exceed the defined service level agreement. For example, let's say your average age of vulnerabilities went from 30 days to 300. Is that good? Face value, you might say, no, it's not. I mean, you went from 30 to 300. Horrible. But what if you had 10 high-priority vulnerabilities last month that averaged 30 days and you fixed 9 of them, and the one that you have remaining is 300 days old because it was a CBSS 4.2 and it's the proverbial hole in your pocket where the pennies fall out. You see, averages can do things to metrics that don't tell the full story. So be sure you look at the full picture, which might come from looking at multiple metrics. I might be saying, well, why would I just use the second metric of how many unpatched vulns are greater than 30 days old? Now remember, every metric is imperfect. For example, let's say you pull metrics on the 15th of the month, and you'll see how many vulnerabilities are past due. One month, it's 30. Next month, it's 300. The second month must mean you're less secure, right? Well, maybe not. Let's say you had one server that had 30 different vulnerabilities, and the second month you had 300 servers running, just same vulnerability. The chance of a single vuln being exploited may be probably lower than 30 different vulnerabilities, all with exploits out there. And so always look for how metrics might miss part of the story and complete that story. You got a brain, use it. And you might see instances where scaling isn't taken into account of your metrics. If you pull metrics on a Wednesday the 15th on one month, you might have 10 servers. But on a really, really busy, crazy month, if you pull metrics on Sunday the 15th, the following month, you might have only 2 servers running because the demand was lower from the crazy, crazy busy month when you had 10 of them running, or is running on a weekend instead of a weekday, and so on and so on. Your vulnerability counts can be influenced by when they are pulled if you have an auto-scaling infrastructure. In that case, you might be better using a vulnerability metric we call defect density, or in other words, the number of vulnerabilities divided by the number of servers. That ratio will stay more consistent with telling the truth of the situation if you have a highly dynamic environment. See, the danger about metrics and statistics was recounted to us over 100 years ago by Mark Twain, who said basically there's lies, they're damned lies, and then there are statistics. Remember, every metric can be used for good or for bad. What's important is you tell a truthful story about what's happening. And you should always talk to the developers to get their perspective on the metrics that you're using to see if there's a way they are maybe gaming the metrics, which might decrease your ability to effectively lower the risk of the company. Come on, you've gamed stuff before. We all know how that works. Look at ways that your metrics could be hacked, so to speak, that could be gamed that would change your posture. Now, once you have your metrics in place, gamify them, right? I mentioned games. People are competitive. Most people are competitive. Use that to your advantage. I've been going through using Duolingo for the last 196 days. And every day it says, come on, you don't want to break your streak. Or you finish a lesson and you want to move on. It says, boop, 15 minutes, you get double XPs. Okay, fine, I'll stick around for another lesson. It's always kind of getting in there because that natural competitive nature gets activated. Learn how people work and use that to your advantage. Work with your leadership team so that you can recognize that each team can meet the target goals for patching and come up with ways to motivate them. Inform you're going to show perhaps the top performers each week, and put them on kind of a wall of recognition. Now, be careful here, but you might want to have a wall of shame. The worst 5 performers each week provide recommendations they can follow to improve their metrics for the following month. I personally do not recommend name and shame. I think it's better off for people to think that they might get shamed unless they meet a certain threshold. If you're going to create something like that, give them time to get on the target, and they'll work really hard to make sure they don't end up on that nasty list. If you are going to go ahead and you need to identify those who are just not getting it, work with those teams. Have a remediation plan that says when these recommendations can be implemented. And if you can do this, then you're becoming a world-class CISO. You aren't just saying, your team suck and they have a lot of vulnerabilities fixed and I don't know why they can't do it and maybe we need to hire more people, blah, blah, blah. You're saying, hey, I met with your teams that look like they needed the most help. We recommended these specific fixes and improvements in the process to them, which they agreed to, and we put together a remediation plan. And now that we've agreed on it, and it's going to be fixed in the next change window of the next 2 weeks, we're going to go ahead and recheck it and make sure it works. We're supporting what they're doing. We're going to provide you feedback next month and let you know if things need additional escalation. Otherwise, I think we've worked really well as a partnership, and that type of partnership makes everyone look good. And that is how you build a top-tier vulnerability management program that works and how you get your people to respect you and want to work hard for you because they know that you're looking out for their best interest as well. Now, one last tip. Remember, you have to have executive buy-in. If the CIO doesn't care about vulnerability management, then most of their direct reports won't either. Or if the CIO says to each one of their direct reports that your year-end bonus is dependent upon how well your team meets security objectives and their goal statements, well, your job as a CISO just got a whole lot easier. So meet with a CIO. Get him or her on board. Have them work with you through the goals that get cascaded through their teams and watch as things evolve in your favor. Better security, lower risk. Vulnerability management is a critical aspect of any cybersecurity program, and by following the steps outlined in this podcast, you can improve your organization's security posture and make it more resilient to cyber attacks. Hey, I hope you've enjoyed learning about ways you can build a vulnerability management program that works. And if you want to learn more about this, be sure to read the OWASP Threat and Safeguard Matrix, or the OWASP TASM. Got a link on our show notes. Spent a great deal of time talking about what good metrics look like. It's a fantastic read for anybody who wants to get into the subject. Also, there's another good book called Effective Vulnerability Management. It's written by Chris Hughes and Nikki Robinson. That's a great read on the topic as well. Also, we'll have a link to that in our show notes. So remember, if you enjoyed our show, share it with others on social media. Let other people know that we're helping out in your career, that we're helping you improve your CISO tradecraft. If we get more people who can help keep their environment safe by patching their vulnerabilities, we improve the world for everyone. So thank you for listening. This is your host, G. Mark Hardy. I'm glad to have spent the time with you. And until next time, stay safe out there.